This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so I know you woke up to the same thing I woke up to on Sunday. You woke up, maybe you were getting ready for church, maybe you weren't, but you saw there had been a Mormon church in Michigan that had been attacked. And we're still sorting out, sifting through the details on the why, but the why is actually not what I want to talk about tonight, not at least right now in the opening. We'll get to some why here in a moment. I want to just go back to something I discussed with you before. Remember when I said this back in July?
This is now going to increase from here. Organized, planned street violence, and the animals who commit this kind of violence are going to move on from hard targets like Bortak, and they're going to come to your church. They're going to come to your child's school. They're going to find soft targets where they can hurt the people they want to hurt. They're not going to accept failure forever. This is not to get you to hide or even be afraid or stay in your home. This is to let you know to keep your eyes open, carry if you can, and be ready to protect yourself, because organized street communism in this country is going to increase from here.
Cut. Nope. Before we get to the actual communism portion of this, let's just focus on the nitty-gritty, what matters to you, what matters to me. The safety of our loved ones, safety of ourselves. You know what I've done in the past week? I've done both of these things in the past week. I sat down at my children's school and had a discussion with the leadership there about the security at the school. Now, don't get me wrong, the school has security. All the little buzz, locked doors, armed police. But I looked around and I thought to myself, if I was a suicidal demon who wanted to hurt these kids, could I? And the answer to that question was yes. Remember, it's something we've learned after years and years and years of dealing with Islamic Jihad. It's extremely, extremely difficult to stop someone who is willing to die or wants to die. Extremely, extremely difficult. And you have to put yourself in that mindset when you look at your child's school. If someone is willing to die in order to kill these kids, can they get to these kids? And for most schools, the answer to that question is yes. Now, I said I did a couple things this past week. You know what I did yesterday? It was actually during church, during the worship service. Just kind of felt compelled, got up, walked out, and just started doing what we would know as a threat assessment. Walked out the front doors, looked around, took a look at the security, took a look at the rent-a-cop they have in the church. We'll get to that in a moment. Took a look at the back door, the nursery. If I was a suicidal demon and I wanted to come kill a bunch of Christians on a Sunday in my church, could I do it? And the answer was, easily. Easily. Why? Back door is sitting there unlocked. Could have walked right in. Oh, but there's a cop there in uniform. There sure was. There was a cop there in uniform. You know what he was doing? I'm not even kidding. I actually stood there, and watched him for a few minutes just to see. In fact, I walked back and forth. I'm 6'8". Is he going to look up? Is he going to notice me? Is he going to register my face? He was sitting at a table on his phone like a teenage girl the whole time. If I was a demon, shoot, I could have killed him and then went and killed everybody else easily. Have you done this in your school, your church? It's fine if you haven't. Now's the time to do it. And once you do it, demand better. I told my school, children's school, look, we need more. This is not good enough. This is a target now. We live, sadly, in a country where schools are a target for demons. We have to try to protect it as if it's a target. Same thing in your house of worship, whatever that house may be. By the way, this applies to synagogues. If you have a house of worship, well, the mosques are probably okay, but that's another story. If you have a house of worship, are they doing enough? Put yourself in the mind of a suicidal demon. Is your church a hard target, or is your church ripe for the picking? And don't say what you may be saying right now, even though I sympathize. I don't want to live in that world. I get it. I don't want to live in that world. I thought I was done having to look around for things like that. That is the world in which we've been given. You cannot wish it away, and neither can I. Start taking steps to ensure your soft targets, the soft targets in your life, are protected, because there are evil people everywhere. Now let's talk about the communist aspect of this. We have talked endlessly, it's been an endless discussion, about elite communists and street communists on this show. Elite communists generally are not true believers. Sometimes they are. They're just out for money and power. These are media people, politicians, and they understand very well that they have foot soldiers, shock troops, street communists. Now, the animals, the street communists, generally are true believers, almost always violent, mentally ill, sometimes drugged out, and they have been radicalized over and over and over again by the rhetoric from the elite communists. Elite communists give orders, not necessarily direct orders, hey, you go kill him, more like soft orders, more subtle orders, if you will. Hey, fascists are evil. Nazis are evil. That guy, he's a Nazi. Anyway, do with that what you will. And so in the wake of the murder of Charlie Kirk, maybe you thought that Democrats, people in the media, would stop the rhetoric. They would change the rhetoric. But not only have they not stopped, they have increased. This is courtesy of Western Lensman. Why have they increased it?
Let me ask you tonight, do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do.
This is what kicking the shit out of fascism looks like.
Try to prevent the spread of the lawlessness and the fascist chaos that's been unleashed against us.
So when we say Donald Trump is a fascist, fascism, a huge component of fascism, is uniting racism, bigotry, a form of racist nationalism.
We are now living in a fascist dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. We are worried about potential rise of fascism in this country. We're worried about our democracy falling to an authoritarian and potentially fascist form of government.
Not only to roll over to Donald Trump's will, but to roll over our democracy and allow him to take over this country as a fascist dictator.
When fascism isn't just coming, it's already here.
The former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, said, "No one has ever been more dangerous to this country than Donald Trump, and he is a fascist to his core."
Why? Because they want people hurt. You can keep telling a Democrat that your rhetoric is getting people hurt, but they know. That's why they do it. You are a good person, so you can't understand why they wouldn't stop. Why won't you change? Their political enemies are being hurt. They don't want it to stop. They're not going to stop. Did you know a Health and Human Services official was followed at the United Nations? They were at the United Nations, followed into the bathroom and assaulted by a street animal. You know what the street animal was calling them? Nazi. Fascist. This is the result. And they're not backing away. Gavin Newsom is currently the likely Democrat nominee for president in the year 2028. Gavin Newsom's social media account, quote, this is after the assassination, "Stephen Miller is a fascist." They want you hurt. It's hard to accept. And this, the result of this is the animal communist base has come to accept, in fact, has come to desire their political opponents harmed. You see this video?
I don't want to be a violent person, but in this case, I feel like that we just need to, I hate to say the word, but assassinate him.
What was your reaction this July when the assassin almost got Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania?
I was happy.
Happy that he missed or happy that it happened?
No, happy that it happened. And too bad that it wasn't in the head.
What was your reaction in July when an assassin came an inch away from ending Trump?
Disappointment that they didn't follow through. They missed.
That shot.
Yeah.
I thought, oh my God. It could have been wonderful.
If he'd been shot.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I can sum it up in one word.
Drad that it happened or drad that it missed?
Drad that it missed. I won't lie. I do not support violence in any way. I think I'm going to let you finish it, Charles.
Well, I'm so shy and reserved. My thought was, if he'd had a good scope instead of a red dot, we would not be going through this. I consider that kid to be a hero. That was an act of a patriot as far as I'm concerned.
That's why they do it. The endless rhetoric. And remember, this is not recent. 10 years of Trump's a Nazi, you're a Nazi, Trump's a Nazi, you're a Nazi, Trump's a Nazi, you're a Nazi. 10 years. What it has done is, my buddy Aaron McIntyre called it a moral blank check, and he's so right about that. It was a great line. It has given these people, it has given the street animals a moral blank check to do whatever they want, because as we've discussed so many times before, what can't you do to a Nazi? If I had Hitler back alive, sitting in a room, just you and Hitler, and he's handcuffed, and you knew legally you couldn't get in trouble, and I had knives and hammers and guns and scissors sitting in front of you, what would you do? What would your moral code allow you to do to Hitler? This is exactly how they think about you, your church, your child's school, your political leaders in the media, the elected officials. This is the situation we have now. It's an extraordinarily dangerous situation. You know, olive oil that's fresh is great, and olive oil that's not sucks. Your olive oil is bland and flavorless because you bought it from the grocery store. My olive oil has always been bland and flavorless because we always got it from the grocery store. I'm not going to get some specialty olive oil. It's all the same, right? Months, years old. That's the kind of olive oil you have. At farmfresh246.com, they'll send you a bottle fresh from the farm. You try one bottle. That's the only place you'll go. It's so full of flavor, you don't realize what you've been eating. They'll send you a $39 bottle for free. You pay them a buck to help cover the shipping. Farmfresh246.com. Go discover some flavor. We'll be back. All right, so what everybody's talking about today is the speech Pete Hegseth gave to all the military top brass. And everyone knew something was going to happen. He put out the word that generals and admirals, all these big shots, all the military leadership, you guys all have to come to Washington, D.C., all of you, physically. Now, that's a huge deal, a gigantic deal. It's not like you or me getting online and booking a Southwest Airlines ticket to fly an hour. These people are all around the planet, and they all come with gigantic entourages, staffers, drivers, all kinds of things, and it was not optional. All of you, come on, we're going to have a little chat. Now, before we get to the actual chat, I need to explain some stuff you already know, some stuff you may not realize about why the military has rotted as much as it has rotted. But what happens? So we're going to talk about communists in power first. When you drive through your town, we're just going to make this about your town. When you drive through your town and you see a school, what do you think should be done at that school? Educate children. When you keep driving down the road and you see the public library, what should be done at that public library? Well, they're all about books. They should be giving out books, loaning out books to people. Okay. You drive to the hospital. What should be done there? Well, caring for sick people. On and on and on and on and on it goes. You believe every single institution should do the purpose of the institution. Almost sounds like a simple point, right? But it's really important to understand that that's not how the communist sees anything. Anything at all. The communist drives down the road and the communist looks over at the school and the communist thinks, how can I use that for my revolution? I need to get in there. There are kids in there. What if I could teach them about the revolution? The communist keeps driving down the road and he sees the public library and he says, there are a lot of kids who go there, adults too. They're picking up books. They're learning things. You know what? We need to get a big tranny display in there. Make sure we really drive that point home. The communist drives further up the road and he sees the hospital. Everything he sees is an opportunity for power and to use that power for the revolution, which brings us to the United States military. This applies across the government, but we're just going to make it about the military. When you think about the military, in any way, maybe you served, maybe you didn't, maybe you have a relative, but even if you didn't, none of that matters at all. When you think about the United States military, what do you think? What should they be doing? Well, training. Training so they can fight for America, defend America. Training so they can defeat our enemies. That's a basic point. That's the point of the military. But you really, really, you have to understand this. That's not how the communist sees the military at all. Defending America, fighting for America. These thoughts never even enter his mind. The communist doesn't think in those terms at all. He's fighting a completely different war, a completely different revolution. For him, the military presents an incredible opportunity. An opportunity for what? Well, we live in a country, by the grace of God, where the military does not rule. We're not run by a general, an admiral. The military, our military, serves underneath our civilian government. You, me, we get to pick the government. And then the government tells the military, you go here, you do this, you don't do that. That's a good system. That's the kind of system we want. But it also is a system that presents an opportunity for the communist. If he can conquer the government, then that huge military, all those people, all those guns, all those bombs, all those tanks, all that money, well, that can all be used for the revolution. All of it. Every single part of it. And so many people on the right in recent years, as we've watched the military get gayer and lamer and gayer and lamer, and we had to stuff women here and DEI this and trannies here, and normal people like you, like me, have been mortified. And it's a common way of thinking for normal people to say, why are they doing this? They're destroying the military. No, they're destroying what you think the military should do. They're destroying what I think the military should do. That's not what they think the military should do at all. They have a gigantic toy to play with. They can use it for the revolution. And so they have done everything they can do to that end, which is why this Trump term is so critically important, because our military in recent years has reached critical mass for communism. At our military academies, you can take courses on diversity. We have so much gay, rainbow, drag queen ugliness there, open anti-white racism. It has turned into Berkeley, a disaster, and it needs a lot of work. By the grace of God, our Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, has spoken endlessly about this long before he was Defense Secretary. He wrote a book about this. People who have fought for this country who know it is a big, big problem. So Pete Hegseth called all those generals, all those admirals, many of whom are responsible for the condition of our military, and they had a little chat today.
From this moment forward, the only mission of the newly restored Department of War is this: war fighting. Preparing for war and preparing to win. Unrelenting and uncompromising in that pursuit. Not because we want war, no one here wants war. But it's because we love peace. We love peace for our fellow citizens. They deserve peace, and they rightfully expect us to deliver it. Our number one job, of course, is to be strong so that we can prevent war in the first place. The president talks about it all the time. It's called peace through strength. And as history teaches us, the only people who actually deserve peace are those who are willing to wage war to defend it. That's why pacifism is so naive and dangerous.
Wow. When's the last time you heard a defense secretary talk like that? Certainly not Lloyd Austin with his mask and his face shield on. When's the last time you remember a defense secretary talk like this?
Should our enemies choose foolishly to challenge us, they will be crushed by the violence, precision, and ferocity of the War Department. In other words, to our enemies, F-A-F-O. If necessary, our troops can translate that for you. As President Trump has said, and he's right, we have the strongest, most powerful, most lethal, and most prepared military on the planet. That is true, full stop. Nobody can touch us. It's not even close.
Now, before I play this next one, I want you to understand something. I did 4 years in the Marines. I was nothing special, just an average grunt Marine. Did my time in Iraq. But because of that time in the Marines, and now because of what I do, I know a lot of veterans. And I'm talking the war fighting type, the trigger pullers, the guys who do not sit on base, the guys who have seen men die, their friends die, the guys who have killed people, the guys who are in these positions we need them to be in. I know lots of them. I count them as friends. We talk all the time. And you can't imagine the things they've said to me in recent years, the disgust they have with watching their pride, their military, watching it be completely destroyed by the Marxists. They're mortified. So many have already gotten out. Not only have they gotten out, they have told me over and over and over again, Jesse, my son will not serve. My daughter will not serve. They will not be serving underneath this disgusting leadership we have now in this country. Those guys, and some of whom are still in, and they write me anonymously, those guys have been dying for leadership that talks, thinks, and acts like them. They've been dying for this.
For too long, we've promoted too many uniformed leaders for the wrong reasons. Based on their race, based on gender quotas, based on historic so-called firsts, we became the woke department. But not anymore. No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions. No more debris. As I've said before, and will say again, we are done with that. New War Department golden rule is this: do unto your unit as you would have done unto your own child's unit. Would you want him serving with fat or unfit or undertrained troops? Or alongside people who can't meet basic standards? Or in a unit where standards were lowered so certain types of troops could make it in? In a unit where leaders were promoted for reasons other than merit, performance, and warfighting? The answer is not just no, it's hell no. Frankly, it's tiring to look out at combat formations, or really any formation, and see fat troops. Likewise, it's completely unacceptable to see fat generals and admirals in the halls of the Pentagon and leading commands around the country and the world. It's a bad look. It is bad, and it's not who we are. So whether you're an airborne ranger or a chairborne ranger, a brand new private or a four-star general, you need to meet the height and weight standards and pass your PT test.
Yes. Standards, huh? We talked more about standards.
Today, at my direction, each service will ensure that every requirement for every combat MOS, for every designated combat arms position, returns to the highest male standard only. Because this job is life or death. Standards must be met. And not just met, at every level, we should seek to exceed the standard, to push the envelope, to compete. It's common sense and core to who we are and what we do. It should be in our DNA. Today, at my direction, we are also adding a combat field test for combat arms units that must be executable in any environment at any time and with combat equipment. These tests, they'll look familiar. They'll resemble the Army Expert Physical Fitness Assessment or the Marine Corps Combat Fitness Test. I'm also directing that warfighters in combat jobs execute their service fitness test at a gender-neutral, age-normed male standard scored above 70%. Simply put, if you do not meet the male-level physical standards for combat positions, cannot pass a PT test, or don't want to shave and look professional, it's time for a new position or a new profession.
The male standard. That's offensive. Yeah, not in war, it's not. Men are bigger, stronger, and faster than women. We have forced women into ridiculous combat positions in this military, and it is, and already has, going to get people killed. It gets people killed when you have people who are not physically able to keep up with others. It costs people's lives so you can feel good about feminism. Look at all the women we have. No more. The highest male standard. And what's crazy is how many people in this country think that's crazy. Every military in the history of the world would have acknowledged that's basic stuff. Here in this country, it's been treated all day as controversial. Aren't we supposed to be more understanding? No. But of course, you know why. We talked about it in the open. They have different ideas about what the military should be. He talked about the people who got promoted and the changes of the promotion ladder.
We are liberating commanders and NCOs. We are liberating you. We are overhauling an inspector general process, the IG, that has been weaponized, putting complainers, ideologues, and poor performers in the driver's seat. We're doing the same with the equal opportunity and military equal opportunity policies, the EO and MEO at our department. No more frivolous complaints, no more anonymous complaints, no more repeat complainants, no more smearing reputations, no more endless waiting, no more legal limbo, no more sidetracking careers, no more walking on eggshells. Promote top-performing officers and NCOs faster and get rid of poor performers more quickly. Evaluations, education, and field exercises will become real evaluations, not box checks, for every one of us at every level.
That is exactly what we've been needing. It was an outstanding day. Even if you're not in, even if you can't see it, it's an outstanding day. Now, the work begins, because there's a lot of rot in there that has to be cleaned out. Clearly, they're getting ready to do so. That may have made you uncomfortable, but I don't care. I'm right. I love chips. Did you know that? I'm a chip freak. When I was a kid, I used to beg my parents to let me have chips. And if they would just give me a bag, which they would never do, I would lay waste to like an entire bag of Doritos or something like that. So I have a real chip problem. I have to be regulated with my chips. But I'm 44 now, and I've come to realize these chips are freaking terrible for you. They just are. There's all sorts of garbage in them, seed oils, you name it, but not Massa chips. Finally, a delicious chip that is guilt-free. I know there have been healthy chips before. They're all disgusting. They taste like cardboard. You want one that's just beef tallow, salt, corn, deliciousness? Massa chips, corn chips, potato chips, all kinds of different flavors. You will love them, and you can finally chip out guilt-free. MassaChips.com/JesseTV.
Well, today is another Liberation Day. The liberation of America's warriors, in name, in deed, and in authorities. You kill people and break things for a living. You are not politically correct and don't necessarily belong always in polite society. We are not an army of one. We are a joint force of millions of selfless Americans. We are warriors. We are purpose-built, not for fair weather, blue skies, or calm seas. We were built to load up in the back of helicopters, 5 tons, or Zodiacs in the dead of night, in fair weather or foul, to go to dangerous places, to find those who would do our nation harm, and deliver justice on behalf of the American people in close and brutal combat if necessary. You are different.
Gosh, it's been so long since anyone talked like that. Joining me now, United States Marine and national correspondent with The Blaze, Julio Rosas. Julio, man, I about came out of my chair watching that thing today.
Yeah, I almost kind of want to go back if I didn't have this illustrious career of going into other crazy situations. But I mean, yeah, that speech, I know some people were saying, oh, it's a waste. Why? This could be done over video conference call. This could be done over a meeting. But Jesse, you know how important formations are, in-person formations are in the military. And it was all this, you know, this spectacle was, there's a reason behind that, right? It's to say, we're going to bring you wherever you're from, where your command is, it could be the other side of the world. We're going to bring you back to DC, to the area, so that you can hear directly from second guy, you know, the guy in charge of the Department of War, you know, close ally of President Trump, that things are different now. Like we're serious and we mean it. And you know, all of the nonsense, all the BS that has been happening for a long time, you know, back in the early 2000s, that's over. And so I think, you know, it was a much needed wake up call to the people above, the high brass, right? And this further exemplifies why, you know, Secretary Hegseth was chosen by President Trump to lead the department, because he understands, as once an enlisted man himself, and you know, he was an officer, not that high of an officer, but an officer nonetheless. And so that's a much needed perspective, especially as a former enlisted man myself.
Julio, how could the brass let it get to the point where they needed a speech like that from the Secretary of War? So many people who were never in and don't really realize it, that they don't understand. They see that general and he's got all these ribbons, Julio, all these ribbons and medals, and he's got the real shiny collar, and surely that means he's a warrior for America and a patriot, right? How could he let this happen?
Well, actually, it's not that all dissimilar from the talking heads, except for you, Jesse, of course, in the media and ground reporters. You know, because when you're on the ground and you see things for yourself, whether it's in a combat situation or in a reporting situation, you have a much different perspective than someone who is in the studio or back at, you know, this office, whether it's in D.C. at the Pentagon or some, you know, high command that's in Europe or, you know, Tampa, you know, for example. So it's inevitable. It's inevitable that you're going to lose some perspective, and that's why you got to have. That's why they have senior enlisted advisors, right? So, but even then, that's still a high ranking position, and so I think the reason why is just because they let it get to that point is just because it's just the politics, and yeah, people don't really understand unless you've been in the military and you've seen it, that once you get to, you know, the 2, 3, 4 stars, things get very, very political, very, very quickly, because, you know, if you don't support certain things, if you don't get along with the blob, you know, the swamp of DC and the industry that supports it, you're not going to get anywhere, and you're not going to get that third or fourth star. You know, you're not going to get that high command that you might have been wanting since you were a cadet at West Point or something. So it's just the unfortunate, hubris that we've had, because, yeah, our track record from these, you know, from the war on terror is, you know, unfortunately, it's atrocious. Not necessarily, you know, it's not because of the ground guys. You know, they obviously did their part. Jesse, you did your part, but it's the high ranking people that make those tough decisions, and when they get clouded or they get distracted with all this nonsense of like, oh, we got to have DEI hires in our human resources department, as opposed to like, what's that going to actually like win battles and win wars? people are going to suffer. And I think, for example, you know, how we ended the war in Afghanistan was the culmination of all that. I mean, that was decades of mismanagement and just total misdirection and mistrust towards the American people. But they couldn't hide that. You know, they couldn't hide how, you know, us leaving that country in such a dishonorable way.
Speaking of DEI hires, here was Dick Levine.
Hello, I'm Admiral Rachel Levine. Climate change is having a disproportionate effect on the physical and mental health of Black communities. Black Americans are more likely than white Americans to live in areas and housing that increase their susceptibility to climate-related health issues. And 65% of Black Americans report feeling anxious about climate change's impact. Through our Office of Climate Change and Health Equity and the Office of Environmental Justice, we're working with providers and community leaders to identify innovative approaches that empower communities to address the health consequences linked to climate change.
Julio, how much of that is still left in the military? Because it seems to me like Pete Hegseth has a lot of cleaning up to do.
I would say there's still a big chunk. And we saw that, unfortunately, in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk being killed. There were a lot of uniformed personnel on their social media pages that are often were times supported by their command, saying the most horrific thing about Charlie and lying about him and what he stood for. I remember during the early days of the Trump administration and the first term, I had to sign an understanding. I had to sign an agreement with through the DOD on social media use, and that whatever I posted had to be professional. It had to reflect good on the service and the department. And these people who have the preferred political leanings and activism that the blob, you know, the DC blob has, they've been super political. They've been super just unhinged prior to Charlie being killed, but people didn't really understand it until, you know, other people were looking for, you know, who was saying what about Charlie. There is this capture that is deeply embedded within the Department of War. This is just the first step to try to get that culture to change and get back to the basics, which is concerning because it's like, well, why haven't you guys been focused on this to begin with? Like, you're dealing with life and death situations for the security of not just the country, but in many cases of the world. And really, we've only been getting along just through the inertia that we've had for since the post World War II period and Vietnam and all that. This isn't Desert Storm anymore. I mean this is just Brave New World stuff that requires serious people, and I think that the Trump administration is doing a good job to get it just back to the basics.
Final one from me. Trump spoke about fighting the cartels today to all these guys. Here's what he said.
Together with the leaders here today, we're also restoring a needed focus on defeating threats in the Western Hemisphere. Throughout this region, cartel terrorists have been allowed to wage a relentless campaign of death and destruction on our country, all because we had weak leadership on top. And we did a great job with it first term, but this is something else what we're doing now. We're taking it to the next level, probably next level times three.
Julio, what does that mean?
Again, it means that things are different now, that we are going to be taken seriously, and that's why they're drone striking smuggling boats from Venezuela, because we were absolutely taken advantage of during the past 4 years. The fact that the drug cartels were able to make more money dealing with human smuggling and human trafficking than drugs during that period is insane. And they did that because they know that they were able to make more money because that was guaranteed. There was no significant loss of quote-unquote product. And so now that we have, again, serious leadership to safeguard the homeland, this is what it means. And Jesse, we've talked about this before, where I'm not exactly sure if it means we're going to do full invasion of South America, but something has to change. And that's why Trump was elected, because the status quo, especially within the Department of the former Department of Defense, It was a total joke. It was a total joke. Everyone saw it. Everyone knew it. But because, again, it is of this going along to get along attitude within the halls of the Pentagon, no one wanted to do anything because it risks their career. And so, again, I think this speech was much needed. It was very refreshing. I was very motivated with it. And I'm not. And I've been out for, you know, over 4 years now. So it's. If I were in, I'd be very happy. I'll just put it that way. I'd be very happy if I was still in.
No doubt. Julio, thank you, boss. Appreciate it. You know why there's a testosterone clinic on every single corner in your town or city? Every corner. You see them everywhere, right? Low-T clinic this or low-T clinic that. It's born out of necessity. The United States of America has synthetic estrogens in its water supply. Lots of them. The result of this is a 50% drop in our testosterone in the last 50 years. That is the end of civilization if it continues. It's that big of a deal. And men feel it. That's why these low T clinics pop up. But that's terrible for you. Handle the problem naturally with natural herbal supplements. Start a male vitality stack from Chalk today and watch your T levels jack through the roof without jamming a needle in your arm. I've been on one over 3 years. Natural herbal supplements. You go to chalk.com/JesseTV for a gigantic discount. Start today. It's time to lighten the mood. And there is obviously something about sick kids that always tugs at every human being's heartstrings. And you don't ever want to see a child sick. And Trump signed an executive order yesterday to accelerate pediatric cancer research, which, I mean, kids with cancer, what's worse than that? And he brought a bunch of these wonderful children into the White House. And it's very rare that somebody steals the show from President Trump, but it happened yesterday.
Would anybody like to say something? Would you like to say something, honey?
Yes. I'm Ilana Myers and I'm 9 years old, and I had a blood cancer called leukemia when I was only 2 years old. I had to get treated at 7 different hospitals across this country, and I had to have 2 bone marrow transplants, one from my dad and one from my mom, and I had to spend many days and the nights in the hospital getting pokies and yucky medicine. And me and my parents were very worried, and I had to go through those 7 different hospitals to find the best treatment that can make me better. And thank you, Mr. President, for making everything happen today so kids like me and Laura, we can still be living today and speaking.
And you're feeling good now?
Yes.
Are you all better? You're pretty pretty close, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you're going to do good.
Good afternoon. My name is Carolyn Hendricks. When I was 4 years old, I was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, a pediatric bone cancer. 11 years later, I'm now 16 years old, and I'm doing great. What you're doing today, Mr. President, means that kids like me will get better options and so much more hope for the future. Mr. President, because of actions like this, kids like me have the chance to grow up, to chase our dreams, and to live full lives. And that is the greatest gift anyone could ever give.
Wow. That was so cool. Where did you learn how to speak like that?
I've done lots of speeches for childhood cancer over the last few years, and I'm also in a theater program, so
that's
helps
great.
A lot.
Well, good. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I've had a brain tumor since I was 4 months. Now I'm off brain. I'm off all medicines. I'm a cancer survivor. I've had a brain tumor since I was 4 months, and I'm doing great. I'm 15 now, and I'm going to 10.
And you're going to be a football player, offensive lineman. Right?
That's wonderful. I'll see you tomorrow.
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.